You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Queen City Companion is an entirely made-up storytelling show hosted by Christy Buckley. It's recorded live every first Thursday of the month at Mutiny Information Cafe. This is the debut show, which premiered October 5th, starring Brian Flynn, Jay Gillespie, Byron Graham, Esther Chen, and Roger Norquist, with a cast of No Masters, No Gods. Here's Queen City Companion.
Making up the stories, making up our dreams. Queen City of the High Plains, we're lovers of the scene. Now I'm in love.
I'm Christy, guys. Oh my gosh. So many of you I know, so many I don't. That's so exciting, guys. Give it up for yourselves for coming here on a Thursday night on this brand new Wackadoodle show. This is a show I've created. A mutiny came to me and said, "Hey, Christy, we want to do storytelling. Figure it out." And that was like, they're like, "We want a lady to host. Figure it out." And that was the thing. There's a lot of true storytelling shows here in Denver. And I was like, ew, fuck that. No, I'm kidding. Those are great. Go to those. But we don't need another one. I am a comedian here in Denver, Colorado, if you guys do not know. And I do a lot of work with writing scripts, writing stories, doing punch-up, doing characters, doing a bunch of stuff. And so I thought, hey, what is a medium we could create to help everybody work on these skills? Because we all, if we're trying to be creatives, need to work on them. So that is my idea here. So this is Queen City Companion, the all-fake storytelling show. Please welcome. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you. I will get this right off. Sorry, this is for a podcast, so I try to keep it as concise as possible because this will be going out to the people eventually. The story I'm telling tonight is fake. However, it is based in some reality. I have lived on the corner of 13th and Colorado in a very dingy apartment complex called Suncoast Condominiums for the last 2 years. And I moved in to my apartment and immediately started losing things, just constantly. First 48 hours I was at my apartment, could not leave because I could not find my keys. And then my roommate, Jake, was nice enough to tell me, "Hey, buddy, there's a ghost. He hides your stuff. So just get used to it." And I was like, "Really? There's a ghost?" He's like, "Yeah, this used to be a very bad place. Lots of hookers, lots of drug deals going on in this very nice building. And there was a man killed in our apartment by the cops, just so you know." And I jokingly started calling him Curtis, because I do believe that if you address ghosts by their name and talk to them with respect, they will give you your keys back. That's what I believe. And to just add a little provenance to the story, my roommate was trying to get a ride home from work one day from a coworker, and he explained where we live. And his coworker said, "No, I will not. I can't go over there. I used to have a bad drug problem. I used to buy drugs over there. I don't like to go over there. It's just a bad thing. I just stay away from it, to stay away from drugs." He said, "That's so crazy, because we knew that there was a drug deal and a good guy died in our apartment. And my roommate," it's so crazy, "she calls him Curtis." And this man went ghost white, no pun intended, and said, "That is insane, because that is my that was my drug dealer's name that lived at that apartment." So I wrote a thing a couple years ago. Just for fun, you know, when you're just like, "Hey, I want to have fun today. Let's write in the perspective of a ghost. You know, let's have fun." And I just thought, because me and my roommate are dipshits, if you will. And I just thought what it must be like for a very, like a junkie or somebody who's seen a lot of stuff, somebody who's been through a lot, somebody who is maybe stuck in limbo, to watch us live our dumb fuck lives. I really think that would be very interesting for him. So I wrote this piece called Curtis, and this is it. Hold on one second. All right. People say they'll sleep when they're dead. The truth is, you never sleep when you're dead. I'm not sure if this is what death is like for everyone. Perhaps I just granted myself this in-between status due to my choices when I was alive. I hope heaven is real. Not for me, but for my family. I want my sister to go to some place better than this when she dies. I don't want her to be stuck. Not like me. I can understand why I wouldn't get into heaven. If your version of heaven would be the first tie-off and the first injection just over and over again until forever, you probably don't get into heaven. I hope it is real, but I imagine that if I didn't get into hell, then it must not exist, therefore heaven must not either. Instead, I am stuck here in this apartment where I took my last breath, this apartment that had been a coffin long before I got shot. I was trapped selling heroin and doing heroin. I didn't leave very often unless my supply was out. In the last few years, I could never even wake up enough to make a visit to my family. It had been 4 months since I had seen my mother when the cops came knocking on that door and that day when everything went to shit. The cop who shot me also received a bullet from me, but I don't think he died. I assume if he did, he'd be trapped here too. The DPD is the first street gang in the city. They don't really get into heaven either. But being dead doesn't necessarily make you an expert on the subject. Maybe his badge got him into heaven. Fuck that pig. He might have been a cop, but he didn't know the pull of the needle. He wouldn't be any better than me if he just got a taste just once. Heroin is such a strong lover. It feels as though you didn't choose her. She chooses you. I have to share the apartment with these two kids now. I shouldn't say that. They aren't kids. They aren't even right out of school. They just have this level of innocence I'm not sure I ever had. They are the type of people that would have crossed Colfax to avoid me back in the day. They are the type of people who never would have been on Colfax in the first place. But that was then. They don't live in that same small Denver I was stuck in. I can't leave this apartment, but I can tell by the way they talk that the city is different. It's softer. It's more naive. Back in the day, you couldn't be a bitch and stick around very long. But if these two can make it, it's not the same Denver I remember. I'm not sure I would want to live in that city, but lucky for me, I don't have to make that choice. The kids in my apartment don't even have a drug dealer. I never would have crossed paths with these two if I were still alive. They buy their weed at a store, which honestly blows my mind. And makes me glad I am no longer in the business. I usually suck with the hard stuff, but sometimes when business was slow, selling weed kept the rent paid and the syringe in my arm. When I look out the window, I see junkies on the corner now, but the sun seems brighter than it used to be. Like there's no place to hide your shame. It's tougher to convince yourself you're keeping your own secrets. I don't haunt these kids because it's not their fault I got shot here. It's my fault for not answering the door that day. It's my fault for being so out of my mind I thought a pistol would save me from the inevitable. But honestly, I wasn't planning on changing, so if I did not die that day, it would have been another day. That isn't their fault. Sometimes I watch the girl sleep, she snores. Or the guy, he laughs all the time, never sleeps. I wish he would, I want the quiet. When I get angry, or the craving for one more fix gets too big, I hide their stuff. It's dumb, I know. But I don't get into heaven, so that what else am I supposed to do while I'm here? Maybe I hid the remote. They'll be fine. They should be lucky they never had to pawn their TV to avoid getting dope sick. When you die a junkie, live that mindset for the rest of eternity until the earth crumbles or this apartment burns down. I hope that will be the end. It's been 18 years, but on this end of the gun, days feel like minutes and hours feel like years. Every time I look at the clock, it's 1:17, and I'm not sure why the afterlife has to be so cruel as to stand still and keep moving forward on without me. After all that, wait, nope, can't read. Okay, so close to the end. Man, I was getting so dramatic. Guys, there isn't a moment I don't long for a fix or wish for a cigarette. I'm just stuck here forever, I think. Thank you. right, so it's so fun. Okay, guys, I don't know what we're doing. I am so, so excited for the show right now. It is like, and this is the very first one we've done. I have so many ideas going through my mind, and I want to hear your ideas too. I want it to be a collaborative effort from all of the community. So if you want to do music, if you want to do commercials, if you want to do short radio production, whatever you want to do. As you know, it's called Queen City Companion. That is a playoff of Prairie Home Companion, just because I love that show. I love that they have no bounds really on what they do, what they bring, and I love to hear your ideas too. So if you guys have fun tonight, please let me know. But are you guys ready to keep this show going and get some more performers? Okay. All right. I'm excited to bring this next guy up. I've seen him doing jokes all over town, but I've never gotten a chance to hear his writing. He does an amazing podcast called The Revisionist Podcast. It is an alternate history podcast. I've done it a few times. You should definitely check it out. He will also be here Sunday for the Denver Podcast Network Launch Showcase. Yes! At 6 p.m. Check it out. Please welcome to the stage the very wonderful Brian Flynn, everybody.
Holy shit. Thank you, Christy, for putting this together and letting me try this terrifying thing. Hello. So this is something I adapted from a graphic novel that I am working on. And I wanted to give you something a little Halloween-y. Here we go. This is... Jesus. Okay, this is called Moonlighting. We have peroxide in the glove compartment for just this sort of situation. It bubbles up in my wounds like seltzer. Carmine drives through Travis on Highway 440. Our van chugs past the Dunkin' Donuts where our night began with us waiting for a job. In the back, the raccoon is sedated in a cat carrier, and Kadira sits on top of it. She uses her cell phone to illuminate her accounting textbook. I flip on the dome light and peel open Band-Aids. She seems so sure this time, Carmine says, too irritated to sound apologetic. She's always sure. She's senile. Kadira can diagnose and study at the same time. It's always a raccoon with her, but she's always convinced it's the second coming of Dracula. It wasn't a raccoon last time. What was it? Possum. I'm holding a tube of Neosporin in my teeth, so it sounds like awesome. Yeah, that was it. Neither my sister nor I want to have the argument again. The one where we try to convince Carmine that when they're scratching up your arms, there's no difference between most small mammals. What matters is that they're pointy. I add another bandage to the beige quilt that is now covering my forearm. It sticks to my hair, and I begin to dread the ripping and pulling that will have to happen 2 days from now. Carmine merges the van onto 278. The Bayonne Bridge is closed, which turns a 15-minute Jersey errand into an hour's round trip. At least he's willing to pay the money for the turnpike. That saves 20 minutes of driving through Elizabeth, and I just want to stand, my burning arms stretched into the balm of the night air. I would roll down the window, but we all take it on faith that it would never roll up again. Carmine owes me his life. I killed the thing that killed his parents. He says he has a code of honor. Kadira says it's an Italian thing. Either way, he comes through on it. He helped me start the business. After a slow month, he shows up with enough to cover expenses. He'll even answer phones and drive, but mostly to save on payroll. Most unspoken agreements involve less commitment. We nodded our way to brotherhood over a decade, which is why I don't want to tell him I want to stop taking jobs from Mrs. McLaughlin. We should stop taking jobs from Mrs. McLaughlin, Kadir declares from the back, not looking up. I'm not saying I disagree, but Kadira snaps her book shut. Then we agree. I want to feel worse for Carmine right now. I probably would if I couldn't see him trying to plan another avenue of attack. I probably would if she wasn't right. I just hope they forget I'm here for this argument. I close my eyes and try to see if I can feel my skin knitting back together. We just... Carmine sputters, grasping for an authoritative tone. We need the money. That's the money McLaughlin will only ever hand to Carmine, never to me. All the times we've been to her rat trap house, she's never said my name. I don't know if she can't or she won't, whether the exotic vowels are too spicy for her Irish tongue, or to say it as a reminder that I'm in her burrow. Ibrahim. Every time I'm loading up the van, I'm trying not to stare at her. My brain keeps repeating, say it. Say Ibrahim. To hell with her money, Kadira snaps, the beginning of the end for Carmine's objection. There are plenty of decent people who are also in mortal danger. There's a part of me that has to be perfect all the time. I can feel it like an itch. What happens when it's not a raccoon? We have to save everyone. It makes me sick to stomp on that part of me, but it makes me sick to hear its voice. The bloody part of me wonders what would happen if she got turned and I got to handle it. Then the itch kicks in and tells me I meant had to handle it. It's the kind of dark that you can only get with industrial lighting. Yellow dark. A brown layer I'm never confident is actually there, and then a blacker sky. The full moon is lost somewhere over the roof of the van. The moon brings light, and it brings work. It's our busiest time of the month. At some point, we didn't need the light anymore, but we always need to make rent. Jersey is 1,000 feet across the water. Out my window, a warren of shipping containers crowds the shoreline. They look like forgotten Legos with mismatched colors stacked on top of each other. Staten Island is the city's basement, but at least it's the city. Carmine has a guy in Bayonne. Carmine's guy handles our animal relocation needs. Carmine's guy insists on being anonymous. I don't think he's in the mob. Even if he is, his only job seems to be raccoon relocation, so I never saw the big deal. Maybe it just helps him feel mysterious. He never says where he takes him, but since we always meet him in a park, I think he doesn't go far. The Girdles Bridge slouches toward us. The bleach white lattice bulk always looks like a giant beast to me. Like Behemoth got beached in Arthur Kill, so they just built a road through it. Dark blobs fly on gangly dives between white beams on the Jersey side of the bridge. Little bastards get further north every year. If Carmine is choosing this to change the subject, he chose well. Devils? Kadira asks with tense shoulders. All over the bridge. Kadira shoves herself between me and Carmine, staring daggers out the windshield. Ugh, they're the worst. They're just demon seagulls, she mutters. Our headlights catch the form of 4 Jersey devils plodding around on the bridge. And this is too much for Kadira. Get out of the fucking road, her scream fogs the windshield. They decline the request. Carmine slows the van to a crawl and they amble out of the way, making their hacking, high-pitched honking sound as they go. Their dumb horse faces would be adorable if they weren't so pitiable. The fact that that horse face has a long reptile neck, bat wings, and hooves make it look like a child's drawing. The unsettling parts of the Jersey Devil are the teeth and the eyes. There's that red glow from behind their eyes, and for how incredibly silly they look, you are reminded that there is something buried in the beast. And teeth are always teeth. The parts of the body that remind you we are all edible. When we were kids, our parents would take us down to the Jersey Shore to Wildwood. It was just enough of a car ride to count as a vacation. We'd walk down the boardwalk and ask our parents about life where they came from. Once when I was 12 and Kadira was 9, a devil swooped down on us as we looked out at the Atlantic, and it took the hot dog out of her bun. Since that day, she's made them her sworn enemy. We roll past the family of devils and onto the Chemical Coast. Maybe we'll be able to have a quiet, healing ride down the turnpike. I try to see something comforting in the glow of the petroleum refinery that foregrounds a neighborhood. Her money isn't worth it, Kadira says from the back. The quiet in her voice makes me cringe in pain. Mrs. McLaughlin? Feels like Carmine is asking a different question, like he's actually asking, can you just ignore it? I don't want to deal with this right now, but it needs to happen. I close my eyes and thank God for Kadira. We deserve better clients. I know she's hard to work with. No, you don't. Right. Sorry. I didn't think about... Carmine knows enough to know when his whiteness makes him say stupid things. I know. But what happens when she calls and it's not a raccoon? She can hire someone else. She just calls us because we're in the neighborhood, and she knows we'll always take the work. Can you two live with the idea of getting a heavy bang shudders through the van? It's the sound of hooves on metal. Kadira begins beating on the ceiling of the van with her fist. This thing again! Get off, get off, get off! The devil on the roof clops its way up and down the van. God, I hate New Jersey! The devil beats on the roof loudly and without rhythm. I keep picturing Mrs. McLaughlin cornered by vampires, or a bunch of shambling, mossy swamp things beating their wet limbs on her windows, or her clutching a phone to her ear, looking to her attic where a furious scratching is echoing, feeling something heavy and hollow in her stomach every time our line goes to voicemail. I picture the way she can't bring herself to look at me. Pull over. I realize it's the first time I've spoken in miles. I jump out onto the dead turnpike. Outside the rattle of the van, I can hear the sad honking of the devil on the roof. Its tail is stuck in the rails along the side of the van. Idiot. I reach back into the glove compartment and pull out a thick rubber band and a strip of beef jerky. That's mine, Kadir objects from the back as I close the door. Easy, I whisper to the devil as I place the jerky in its line of sight. It puts out its muzzle to sniff the meat. The food takes precedent over its stuck tail and takes the dried beef in its mouth and begins chewing contentedly. There's a moment when the creature is done eating, but before it realizes there is more food somewhere out there, when it's calm. A lull where it looks like it's thinking, what am I again? And if you're going to deal with a Jersey devil, this is the best time. With speed, but not suddenly, I stretch the rubber band out and wrap the devil's muzzle tight. It flaps its wings in protest, but now I've spaced to unwrap its tail from the railing. I take the beast under my arm and stroke it behind its round ears. I'm not sitting in back with that thing, Kadira says, standing by the open rear door. I know, I say, and step into the back, with an increasingly confused monster under my arm. Everyone gets back in, and we resume the road to Bayonne. I can see the Newark airport outside Carmine's window. What are you going to do with that? Carmine asks. Release it. Can your guy handle it? I'm sure someone can. Give McLaughlin a referral. Someone will take her. We're done with her. Carmine is silent the way he usually is when he relents. I hold the creature and try to keep it comfortable. I hope it doesn't bite me when the rubber band comes off. I hope this will make me feel better about tonight. I hope I'm able to tell if it does. Thanks, Mimi.
Brian Flynn, everybody. Keep it going for him. Again, check out his podcast, The Revisionist Podcast. It's where they actually tell the real history of something, and then a comic makes up the fake history, and then you decide which one you like better, which is always fun. So definitely check that out. Okay, I'm going to keep this show right on going. This next lady. I am a stand-up comedian, and so whenever I have somebody who is coming into town to do comedy, I want to give them a little stage time. This next lady is here. She is rehearsing a play called Smart People at the Denver Center right now. It opens 10/13. She's a comedian. She's going to do a little stand-up for you. Please welcome to the stage Esther Chen, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Instead, I'm going to share a few stories today. I still think it's really funny that I'm cast in a play called Smart People. Something that Denver has done to me, I did my costume fitting today, and I realized the altitude has made me go from a B cup to a double D, which does not happen in New York. So, again, my name is Esther Chen. I'm from Taiwan, and I have some stories of when I first came to America. When I first came to America, I was 16 years old, and I went to a Christian boarding school, and I came to America by myself. And at the age of 16, my English was very bad, and I was here by myself, and I tried very, very hard to improve my English. So I went to a boarding school, and one night at dinner, I figured out that the best way to learn was to ask questions. So I asked. I said, when do we have intercourse? I just thought that's what you had between your appetizer and entree. But then over time, I realized it's something you do to get better grades. See, my problem growing up in Taiwan as a Chinese kid is that I was bad at math. And when you're a Chinese kid and you're bad at math, you start wondering if you were adopted. Like, I remember my very first math test. I was in first grade, and I got 8 questions right. And that wasn't 8 out of 10, that was 8 out of 100. And, you know, the teacher was up at the podium, and she was like, Wang Daming got 97, and Li Xiaoying got 99, and Esther got really nice handwriting. And the kids were all like, oh, you dead meat. Oh, before they kill you, will you first give me your Hello Kitty pencil? Actually, you know, this was all in Chinese, so it sounded more like, oh, 你完蛋了!在你死掉以前,你可不可以先给我你的 Hello Kitty pencil? Then I brought my test home, and, you know, suddenly my dad had this, like, gloom to his voice, and he was like, Essa, you bring shame to family. You cannot count duck ducklings. So I'm a millennial, and you know, I'm on Facebook a lot, and I can usually tell from a profile picture whether to accept or decline. And last week I got this request from this creepy, like middle-aged, like Asian man. I'm like, oh, delete. And my father found out, and he was like, your uncle, very upset. You know, things are really different where I'm from. Back in the days in Taiwan, because of all the poverty, most of the babies weren't born in hospitals. It was at home, and they had a midwife. So their exact birthday wasn't really known. They just always kind of did an approximation. So if you ask my father when his birthday was, he would be like, oh, the day the rooster crow only once. And dog die. Like, can you imagine, like, that happened today? You know, you're, like, registering your child for school, and you know, the teacher's like, oh, well, when's his birthday? And you're like, oh, the day the New York subway broke down. Very long time. And, oh, my Samsung explode. A lot of most fathers, they want their daughters to get married and have a family and have kids. And then, well, there's my father. My dad, when I last visited, made me kneel in front of a statue of Buddha and to promise that I would bear him a son and that the son's last name would be Chen. It was actually the ceremony he put me through. And when it was over, I was like, why did you make me do that? You know, my sister already has two sons. And he said, yes, but the last name is Wei, not Chen. You must bear son to carry a Chen legacy. And I was like, in China, there are 350 million Chens. Then I said, well, okay, well, what if my husband wants his son to have his last name? And he said, you marry white American. They don't care. I think when people come to America, they really shouldn't feel the pressure to change their last names. But maybe there are some exceptions. Like, my friend's family runs this really, really great noodle place called Le Wang Restaurant. Other than really great noodles, they also offer free internet, Wang Wi-Fi, that if you want to use, you would have to ask them for Le Wang password. And right next to them, there's this chain, soup and salad chain called Hale and Hearty, and they have this green salad promo card, and you know, you buy 10 salads and you get one free. So then I went there after, and the cashier had this big booming voice, and he was like, do you have a green card? And then half the kitchen staff ran out. Thank you guys for having me. I'm really excited to be in Denver for these upcoming months. Thank you for having me tonight.
Esther Chen, everybody. Go check out her show, Smart People, at the Denver Center for Performing Arts, starting 10/13. She is rehearsing every day. It's really exciting to watch her. You post on Facebook every day what you're doing. It's really fun to watch the process of a production. So thank you for coming. Okay. I should tell you two things. When I do produce this show, I give everybody a theme, and I forgot to tell you that. Partly because it's a bad time for this theme, but I thought of it a month ago. But the theme tonight was bang. So tough timing, but that's what they're going off of. So if you're like, why'd they choose this story? That's why. Anyways, we're going to keep on going. I promised and I wanted in my heart of hearts forever and ever for this show to be the weirdest fucking thing I've ever done. And so for this first one, I thought, who's the weirdest person I've ever known. No. So I will present this next act to you. They are part of Sexpot Comedy Network, another franchise in Denver that supports the Denver entertainment scene, the comedy scene especially, but plenty of us, along with Mutiny Information Cafe. Please welcome to the stage No Gods, No Masters.
Thank you, Buckley. Guys, thank you much for being here. My name's Roger Norquist, and about 6 months ago, me and my buddies got real stoned, and we were like, what's a fun thing to do? And we decided puppetry. So that's going to be a thing. Thank you much for being here, and we'll get on with this shindig.
There's so much room back here.
Oh, man. I've got so much to protest and so many signs to make. Oh, but spelling's just so hard.
Hey, I don't think that's that big of a deal. Let me see some of your signs. I saw this one over here. Stop. Fascist. Well,
you like it?
I mean, I like the message, but you did spell fascist wrong.
Oh, man. All right. Well, how about... this one.
Healthcare rolls. You know, there's too many Z's in there. That's putting me to sleep.
Oh, phooey. Okay, all right. How about, I know I'm going to get this one. I hope so.
America was never great. Well, you got one word spelled right, if you're talking about cheese.
No, I was talking about great, like, gooder than good.
Oh, well, again, your message is on point. America never was great. But your misspellings might be confusing your target audience.
Ah! Duck this!
Well,
I'm never gonna be a good anarchist and make political change if I can't make a poster.
It's not a total failure. I mean, we just gotta work on your spelling. In fact, I got a friend around here somewhere who's real good at spelling. He writes all sorts of paragraphs, which are made of words, which are made of letters, all put in a sequence.
Wow-wee, really?
Oh, yeah. He's so great, he even writes manifestos, which are like all of that stuff put together.
Wow-wee. Manifesto. Isn't that when we tell the native people to get off our property?
Oh, no, silly. That's manifest destiny. A manifesto is a work of art, and it's really great. Oh, actually, there's my buddy now. He's this tall drink of water in the gray sweatshirt and the sunglasses and a guitar and this wispy mustache. Oh, there he is. That's the guy.
Oh, wow. He looks non-threatening.
Hey there, Folky.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're doing just great, except... we're having some issues spelling. I know that words are spelled wrong, but I don't know how to spell them right.
Well, you know what? I could probably help you with that. I used to write manifestos, but now I'm writing folk songs because of children's attention spans.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Could you teach us how to spell a few words?
You know what? I got a great song that'll teach you a couple words. Are you guys ready to hear it?
Oh, yeah.
Here it goes. I hope you like it.
That's how you spell corruption today. A-M-E-R-I-C-A. It's the spider of the earth, and it's gonna kill us. If you think you're special, you're not. The government wants you to rot. I got one word for those in charge, and I can spell it really well for those oppressed. Well, it's B-O-M-B-S. That is my answer when I impressed. B-O-M-B-S. Force can be the weapon of the oppressed. Are you tired of living a lie? Government wants you to die? I got one word, and it's really bad, and I'll spell it for you one more time. It's A-M-E-R-I-C-A. 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 I like to send them all to hell with the fiery care package. A-M-E-R-I-C-A. 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 B-O-M-B-S. A-M-E-R-I-C-A. B-O-M-B-S. A-M-E-R-I-C-A. B-O-M-B-S. Well, thank you, guys. I'm glad you liked it.
Wow, that was great, Folky.
Wow, we learned, like, to spell two whole words.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I guess I should change this sign, too.
Let me see that real quick. I mean, I don't know. I think that works. What about you, Lousy?
Oh, yeah. I think that's right on point. What about you guys?
America education sucks. Thank you, guys.
Size, perfect. Thank you so much.
No gods, no masters. they really inspire me to, like, be the weirdest, and I love it so much. This next guy also inspires me to be the weirdest. I do want to remind you that the theme tonight is Bang. So if you're wondering why he's doing what he's doing, now you have an answer. Okay? He is so wonderful. I have so much goddamn fun every time I see him. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's UltraSexLaser, and he is amazing. Please welcome to the stage the very hilarious and wonderful and talented Jay Gillespie, everybody.
Okay. The question is, are you willing, I should slide over here, are you willing to get really weird with me? Okay, I saw her. She walked in. She gave him her fucking ID and she got herself a fucking gun. And then she went down the range and she lined it up. I think her name was Jessica or Patty, but it doesn't matter. She's the hot girl in my gun safety class. She's the hot girl in my gun safety class. And in this battlefield called life, she's got her finger on the trigger of my heart, you understand? And I love her the way that Lieutenant Colonel Bill Kilgore loves the smell of napalm in the morning. She's a hot girl in my gun safety class. All right, okay. 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 All right. People are like, Jay, how do you feel about the state of this world? And I'm like, well, I'll tell you. The world is a shithole. The world is a shithole. The world's a fucking shithole and it's covered in piss. The world is a shithole. It's gonna come to an end. It's coming to an end. So let's go out with a bang. All right. That's more just true than it is funny. In these trying times, okay, it ain't easy being a stand-up comedian, you understand. I'm not going to put any shoes on my kids' feet from doing this show tonight. That's okay. I do it for the love. But when I get in front of these big groups of people, I got a little side hustle. I make my cash someplace else. I like to put that information out in front of, into your ears right now, if you'll let me. I'm Jay Gillespie. I'm a haircut artist. Haircut artist. You need a haircut? Get it from me. Jay Gillespie, I'm a haircut artist. I cut bangs better than anybody in the whole fucking city. If you want it straight, it's going to be perfectly straight. If you want your bangs asymmetrical, I could do that too. How do you want your bangs? I got that haircut. I'm Jay Gillespie. I'm a haircut artist. Haircut. Okay. I'm gonna do one more, and it's a big hit all over some of the Eastern Bloc countries. Everybody's singing it over there. Christy knows, that's why she brought me in. Song sounds like this: something something dildo, and then something something dildo, something something dildo. I said rectum, damn near killed him. First verse. I said Bukes, how much Kid Rock do you want me to do tonight? And she was like, that's not what she said before this. That's okay. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to sing some songs, and I'm going to point at you. When I point at you, I need you to say bang. You understand? You see what we're doing here? You see how it's fucking going down? Let's give it a shot. You ready? Okay, we're going to have to be quicker. It ain't going to work like that. Sometimes I'm going to hold up two fingers. And when I do that and I point at you, it means I'm going to need you to say bang twice. You ready? Let's give it a shot. Yeah, oh my God, this is going to work. It might just work. Chorus. Something, something, dildo, and something, something, dildo. Something, something, dildo, I said rectum, damn near killed him. Second verse. You ready? Here we go. Wild Mustangs and the porno flicks. All my homies in the county in cell block 6. The grits when there ain't enough eggs to cook. And to D.B. Cooper and the money he took. You're gonna have answers, but that's no fun. Now get in the pit and try to love someone. Ball with the ball, the diggy diggy, I'm shank the boogie, said I'm junk the boogie. Ball with the ball, the diggy diggy, I'm shank the boogie, said I'm junk the boogie. I was 5 and she was 6, rode on horses made of sticks. I wore black and she wore white, she would always win the fight. She shot me down. That awful sound. Bang, bang. And I hit the ground. Bang, bang. My baby shot me down. I fly like paper, I get high like planes. Catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. You come around here, I make them all day. I get one done in a second if you wait. Now all I want to do is and ka-ching, and I take your money. Now all I want to do is and ka-ching, and I take your money. The Love Shack is a little love place where we can get together. Now knock a little louder, sugar. On the door, baby. On the door. On the door, baby. You're what? Tin roof. Rusted. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that, ding, dang, what I want to be with. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah. He told me what to do. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, dang, wah, wah, bing. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, dang, wah, wah, bing. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, dang, wah, wah, bing. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, dang, wah, wah, bing. I don't want to work. I just want to on my drum all day. I don't want to work. I just want to on my drum all day. Something, something, dildo. Something, something, dildo. Hey, thank you so much. Y'all been great.
Jay Gillespie, everybody. It was as I thought it would be. I'm going to pass this around, you guys. This is for the performers. They're not getting paid tonight unless you drop something in this bucket, just so you know. Other than their stuff going on out into the world on this podcast that nobody's heard about yet. That's the pay they're getting tonight unless you drop some money. So I'm going to pass this around. Okay? Yeah, okay. The more you give, the better it is. You know, that's how it works. It's a sliding scale system. I do want to promote a couple things on my part. I am Christy Buckley again. I am working all over town. I am doing a couple shows coming up. The beer tonight, if you got one, is sponsored by Mile High Movie Roast. So if you would like to watch me make fun of Pet Cemetery on either October 13th or October 20th. I will be at Sloan's Lake Alamo Draft House or Littleton Alamo Draft House. I am also part of a group called the Pussy Bros with Rachel Weeks and Janae Burris. We have two shows tomorrow because I can't stop, won't stop. I have a free show, if that's what you're into, at El Torito at 7 p.m. I don't need you to come to that one. That room usually fills up, but it is free, so that might be your wallet size. I'm going to get this show right on going. This next lady coming to the stage, I am so excited to have her. I've never heard any of her work. It makes me so, so excited. She is an editor of Cherry Magazine, which is available here for free. It's amazing. You can go look. If you like what she does right now, you can come back, look at it. Please welcome to stage Jen Colick, everybody.
Hi. I am going to bring it way down here for a second. I have a short haunted house story to tell you guys. She stared up at me from the front walk, her hair and her coat and everything about her drooping in the rain. I can't tell you where to find her, I said, and I wouldn't anyway. She made a move toward the stairs, and I held up my hand to stop her. She looked so desperate. She's a reporter. She moves around a lot. I'm not saying any more. On the next block, the elevated tracks rumbled, and in my mind, I saw the Times warehouse, corrugated and ugly. As a girl, I thought that was the whole operation. Phone banks and desks all spread through a windowless hangar. The woman turned to go. I let the rotting door slam. She doesn't know what you're thinking. She's not a mind reader. She'd never get there anyway. Back inside, I looked for more evidence. The carpet was damp most of the way up the stairs. The sectional couch deflated and sagging. Houseplants all dead. I thought of my car three blocks down and wondered if it was safe. When the smell started getting to me, I went back out to the porch. Years ago, it was beautiful. The windows were cracked and dirty, and large bushes hid them from the street. It caught my eye too late, the spot where the floorboards rotted through. They broke beneath me, the crack of wood cutting through the thick, humid air. My thigh was very warm, then very cold. My left arm was caught beneath the floor, and I tried not to twist too much as I felt around, the jagged end scraping needles against my skin. I felt a slickness on my jeans, a shocking intersection where the wood went in. The woman would be back, I was sure, if I could just think of what to say.
Thanks. I'm not counting the money already. That's not what I was doing. That's not my fault. She had 10 minutes, I thought. Guys, give it up for Jen Colick. That was awesome. Thank you so much. All right, we have one more performer for tonight. This is a very, very good friend of mine. She is... wishful thinking, guys. I'm so sorry. He is... It doesn't matter, okay? Let's not hold on to our gender norm. Identification. Okay, guys, this next guy coming on stage, he is a writer for The Westword. He runs a few amazing shows, but one that I love is Modern Drunkard. It is once a month on Saturdays at El Torito, where we have comedians who we decide what their weird tics are. Like me, do I talk about my disability too much? Do I talk about my dad too much? Let's write it on a paper behind her and drink every time she talks about Todd. Okay, that's the show that they have created. It's very fun. Please welcome to the stage writer for The Westword. Again, I said Byron Graham, everybody.
Keep it going for Christy Buckley, everybody. It's designated drunkard. I do present as a biological male. But great, Christy Buckley, great, right? Just like Garrison Keillor, except less feminine. Okay. Okay.
We're friends, it's okay.
I didn't know what the theme was, so I wrote a story called Saltwater, and I'm very nervous to read it out loud. Here we go. Okay. As the first wave crashed against my face, I awoke with a gasp, nearly choking on the seawater. I became aware of my limbs, and thrashed violently to stay above the surface. I kicked my legs, and pain tore through my left ankle, and I was held in place. That's when I reached down and noticed the shackles fastened around my ankle. Rusted by salt water, the manacle was secured to a long, heavy chain, festooned with waving strands of seawater. I couldn't see the bottom. Couldn't see the ocean floor, and the chain must have been locked down there somewhere. I scanned the horizon, but couldn't see land in any direction, just ocean. I kept treading water and tried to take stock of the situation I'd found myself in. "Don't freak out," I said aloud to no one in particular. "You're chained to the ocean floor in the middle of nowhere, but if you freak out, you could die." I closed my eyes and attempted to take a deep, calming breath when another wave crashed against my face, flooding my nose with salt water. I sputtered and sneezed, wiping away the phlegm with my hand and then rinsing it in the surf. Okay, so how the fuck did I get here? I racked my scrambled brain, trying to recall the last place I'd remembered being. I pictured myself waiting on Hannah's doorstep with a pizza and a bottle of red wine, brimming with the idiotic hope unique among amorous dudes called over to their ex-girlfriend's house in the middle of the night. I knocked a jaunty little knock and waited for her to open the door. And then my hopes were dashed immediately when I saw her ashen, tear-streaked face appear through the front window, floating through her darkened hallway like an apparition. She wordlessly let me into her house and shuffled back into the living room, where she'd had a cocoon of blankets she'd piled onto the floor. I settled down next to her. She rested her head on my shoulder. And I think we fell asleep like that. So that was my most recent memory, and it doesn't begin to explain how I got here. Hannah's apartment is in fucking Denver, thousands of miles away from any ocean. Trying to piece together any sort of narrative defied logic. How the hell could somebody transport me to the middle of the ocean, lock my ankle in what looks like an 18th century fucking manacle? Who would do something like this, anyway? The sharp caw of the seagulls flying in slow, lazy circles above broke my thought. At least I thought they were seagulls, as I squinted out their silhouettes through the blinding rays of the sun that seemed far too near to the earth. I briefly entertained the idea that this could all be a dream, but it was something else altogether. I could taste salt, feel the thrash of the surf, touch the dead skin on my sunburnt lips. My muscles ached from swimming. All this theoretical bullshit is getting me nowhere. It doesn't matter how I got here. I just need to escape. Not very graceful, page turner. Not at all. I dunk my head below the surface, forcing my eyes open despite the stinging saline water. I grasp at the chain below the water, but there wasn't enough slack to take hold of it while keeping my head above the surface. After a series of painful and fruitless attempts to wrest my leg free, I realized that I'd have to change tactics or I would never get out of here. I took a big, hoarse breath, dove towards the ocean floor, pulling myself along with the chain for the last few feet. 15 seconds. I could reach the bottom in 15 seconds. The chain appeared fastened to something beneath the sand. I resurfaced to catch my breath before diving again. As I dug my way around the base of the chain, I could just begin to see something glowing, just there, below the surface of the earth. I resurfaced again, determined to find the source of this beguiling light. I dove again, reaching the bottom in 10 seconds this time, tearing frantically at the ground, digging and digging towards the ever-brightening light. I resurfaced and dove again, the blood pulsing in my ears like the drums of a marching army. I dug, I dug, I dug until the glow surrounded me, enveloping my entire body in an odd, elemental warmth. And then there was nothing. Just bright white light, gentle hum, and bathing in that elemental womb-like warmth. My memories, fear, and identity all washed away until everything was just white, healing light, and then nothing. Nothing at all. As the first wave crashed against my face, I woke with a gasp, nearly choking on seawater. All right, you guys, thank you so much.
Byron Graham, everybody. Isn't she lovely? Okay. Guys, again, that is our show for this evening. That is a podcast called Queen City Companion. I am so excited about the show. Again, this is the very first one we've done. I am, like, totally excited. and open to any ideas. So if you want to perform, let me know. If you have an idea, let me know. I would love it if there was an 85-year-old man standing behind me just playing the banjo between every person. Like, I don't care. I literally don't care. I want it to be wonderful and weird. My only stipulation is that a woman hosts and books it. So that is, sorry. Okay. But anyways, come back next month. First Thursday of the month. That's what today is. I do have the bucket again. Right now, as it stands, these performers will get $5. So, you know, if you have more, let me know. If not, it's fine. $5 is going to buy them a coffee. So we're going to be great. Guys, thank you guys so much for coming out. Give it up for Corey Healy for getting this ball rolling. Come back next month. Again, let me know if you want to do this show. I've been Christy Buechle. You guys are wonderful. Appreciate it.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.